Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickle of death to be with you. This Saturday, I'm your host, Fred Ramsey, my co-host, owner-operator of Tobin Lawn, the greatest lawn service in America, Mark Tobin. He's one of the best fishermen. He can walk on water. He's a good guy, pleasant to be around, exceptionally brilliant, dashing, debonair, and handsome.
No, that sounds all wrong. That is not like you to be what? Complimentary.
What?
Normally, you give me all kinds of grief.
No, them days are over with.
What is wrong with you?
Them days are over with.
I don't believe it, not for a second.
I didn't lure you in on the decoys, huh?
No.
Speaking of decoys and duck hunting, which we weren't, but we will. Since I host a show, we big dog duck hunting.
Yeah.
Weirdest duck season I've ever saw. And I've heard more squalling. I've had more calls and people mad and upset. Where are the ducks type attitude? Well, it's up until a few days ago. I don't know about this next front or last front. They're still in North Dakota.
Yeah, we haven't had any real weather.
Yeah. And the poor refuge guys over there have gotten a blunt of it. You know, it is basically flooded with Squaw Creek and Davis Creek. They cut them in, and they got a gate they put down on both of them to shove the water into the refuge. And they've got four pumps on the refuge. And, it's just too dry. I mean, when you walk out there and you look down and you can see 2 foot down on the ground with a crack, it's about 3 to 4 inches wide.
Yeah, it takes a lot of water to fill that up.
And they had an impromptu meeting the other night about it, and boy's mad at him. And Wim is his name, and he's just a nice guy. And but he can't run. Mother Nature has the cards. That's as simple as it gets on the deal. So without a rain, and then we got this little something last night, but we need three inches of rain, and 2 days later get another 3 inch rain, and then things would semi come back to normal. But I've never, ever, ever saw it this dry up there on the deal. Yeah. So, way it is. Now, here's the, I always try to be a little bit upbeat. Sometimes I'm not, but I don't like the way things are headed. Across the Prairie Pothole region, which generates our ducks, this is the third year of the drought up there. And we are in liberal guidelines, which means we have 60 days, 6 ducks, 4 mallards, 2 lesser ducks. I think we've been right on that edge of going to moderate. And if we go into restricted, it'll be 30 days, 1 duck a day. They don't start getting some snow across Canada, Saskatchewan, North Dakota. Next 60 days are so crucial for our habitat and for our setting of the rules and regulations from here on out. And we've been spoiled. I mean, we've been in liberal guidelines now, 12 years, something like that, 12, 14 years, and maybe even longer. Yeah, I think it is longer. But anyway, I'm old. I forget things. But we've been blessed, and it's been a lot of waterfowl. At one time, a few years back, it really was exceptional on the count, exceptional habitat. And so we were very, very, very fortunate. And we should count our blessings for the ones we've had before. So it's just too bizarre, too weird. I tell you what I see, Mark. These ducks that I'm working up there on the spread come around the farm, which is very few. Hardly ever see. When we went the other night and hunted, all me and Jeff Martinez went the other night, killed one duck.
Oh, dang.
And had to kind of trick shoot him. You know, he's just paired off to the left of the decoys. But these ducks are 3-year-old ducks. Well, they work and they work and they work and they look and they're looking for an excuse not to come to the decoys versus as one to come to the decoys. You can tell the difference. And the ducks that we've been so fortunate to harvest been double curled, had got all their flight feathers, really nice ducks. Now, with that being said, the other night when me and Jeff went up, we shot a duck that you probably could wipe the milk off of his beak. He was an itty-bitty drake. And you go, come on. And he had the wrong color legs, you can tell. I call it a Minnesota mallard. And it's just weird. You know, had 3 weeks ago, I had blue-winged teal. Never had blue-winged teal. Never, ever, you know, at this late in the season. We got some kind of a wicker-billed bunch of birds. I don't know what they are. They stand about 2 foot tall, and they have a great big long snoot on them. They're blackbirds. Weird, out of Florida, I think. And that should tell you something. You know, they come in every night about the same time and land in the same spot. What do they call them? Lipoids? Does that sound right?
Nope.
Doesn't? I think it's called lymphoids or something like that. Nah, that's not right.
That sounds like some kind of disease.
Well, it's a bird that walks and looks like he's got a limp. And that's why they call him that. And they got this great big long, about a 6-inch long curved beak.
What the heck?
In front of them. They're weird. They're out of Florida. You go to Florida. I think it's I better look in this before I get talking about it. I think it's an ibis family, maybe. I'm not real sure. I'll look into it and do some research on it.
Take a picture of it for me.
Well, yeah, I'd love to. I could, you know. They've been so close, they come right in on top of the blind. And they fly in formation. They set their wings. Oh, yeah, they're cool-looking birds. But it's just weird. But why would that bird be here?
Yeah, how many years have you been out there? Never seen one?
Never seen one. You know, I've been hunting waterfowl since I was 10. I'm 72, so 62 years of learning of duck hunting kind of thing.
That's very strange.
Yeah, it is. And I've seen weird birds this year. I tell you something else. I try to come away every duck season with learned. You know, I don't know it all. Nobody does. Anybody tells me they know everything.
Yeah.
I was talking to some guys the other day, talking about this guy was telling about how great a blue cat fisherman he was in Missouri River. Well, he hadn't figured him out. I haven't figured him out. You won't figure him out. Nobody will ever figure him out. One of those guys that say they figured him out generally are wrong. Yeah. You know,
caught him one day.
Caught him one day that way, and then the next time it's fishing. Yeah. You know, it's the way it is on the deal. You know, you catch the next day, you go, what? Yep. Oh, he's at the same spot, the same depth of lures, and same lure. What do you mean?
Not catching any fish. That's why it's called fishing and not catching.
Well, these ducks, here's what I've determined. I'm not very good with a duck call. I'm from a 1 to 5, I might be a 5 or 6. My boy's probably an 8 or 9.
You everybody said from 1 to 5, you're a 5 or 6?
Yeah.
I think you meant to say from 1 to 10.
Excuse me. I'm old. I'm old, Mark. I'm
all
right.
That's all right.
But 1 to 10. Never correct the host on the air. Makes me look stupider than what I am. But anyway, I've learned that tuning the call, and I learned this from Steve Kitchen. Steve Kitchen, now that I think back about hunting with him, was the greatest waterfowler I've ever been around. I've never heard anybody better, never seen anybody more intense. He taught me, I only got to hunt with him a few days, and it wasn't enough. This guy is phenomenal. You know, he knows how to call in and kill ducks on this thing. But what I've taken away from this season is good duck calling is everything. I gave away a lot of hunts and the charity thing, and I had some guys in, and father, son, and they pulled out these duck calls, and if you didn't know no better, you'd say they were purposely trying to run the waterfowl off. Well, how do you jump somebody and say, listen, you're a buffoon.
Burst their bubble, yeah.
You're a buffoon, moron, and an idiot, but I can't say that to them on the blind because, you know, that's a charity thing that we do. It's just weird, you know. So I've learned that I've got to be better on a duck call, you know. I watch Kitchen adjust a call, a read. He moved it the width of a hair on that reed, and I could tell the difference.
Really?
It's unbelievable. And, I'm such a duckaholic. When the ducks we have, we're having thousands of ducks come into cornfield at dark, learn behavior. And I would fit my hip boots on and walk out there with them because I wanted to hear them. I wanted to know whether they're doing a 7-note, a 5-note, 3-note. And I stood in the middle of them ducks the other night. And I don't know how many is there, several thousand. and the squeals, perks, the peeps. If we could do that, you'd kill a lot more ducks. And one hen is grouchy, what I call grouchy hen, and the other is what I call a yellow hen, which is a higher note octaves. Every duck's different. But we, you know, and then the other thing that Kitchen has taught me about calling to them on the corner, right before, if they're going to adios, and they come by and they look at your spread and they don't like what they're seeing, they adios. And then you can call at them right then. If they're accelerating or their wings get faster, never, ever, never, ever call to that duck. When he lines out, when he finally kind of mellows out and slows his wing beat and kind of maybe he's probably looking back, he's getting so far away I can't see, but hit him on the corner. When he tips his wing to you, you go, oh, he liked that. Hmm. And that's what you learn.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. And nobody's got a panacea called. I blow Rich and Tone, or I blow a J.J. Lair's. Rich and Tone makes Echo makes a great call. There's a million really good duck calls out here. But you got to get one that you can tune and you can blow, and very few people take the time, the effort, you know, to do it. When they pull out their call and sound like a kazoo, this is not good, especially on three-year-old ducks. You know, it just doesn't work. So the moral of the story is, work on your duck calling every year. So what the hey? Hey, we are brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the finest Chevrolet dealer in the United States of America, in my humble opinion. These are good people. So if you're in the mood for a new vehicle, I-29 in Frederick, 31 minutes north of KCI, for the brother-in-law deal, the proverbial brother-in-law deal on a vehicle. There's nobody finer than Reed Chevrolet. They stand behind you after the sale. If you got a problem, they got a problem. If you don't like the price, you tell them you don't like the price. I think you can do better. And if they can, they will. But they are the nice, and they got a great selection. Not a good selection. They have a great selection of Silverado pickups for you outdoors guys. My goodness, I got one. I love it. I've never, ever driven anything any better. Every once in a while, I just blow out a little bit of air as I'm coming down I-29 and go, wow, this is a nice ride. This is a nice truck. So if you're in the mood for good, honest, dependable transportation and a dealer that stands behind you, that Reed family, there is none better anywhere in America. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We've got to take a little bit of a break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. Mark, I want to pick your little brain here for a minute.
That'll be quick.
What?
That won't take long.
You're the smartest man I know.
Yeah.
You're a retired brain surgeon.
Retarded.
Do you hate moles?
I do.
Okay, all right. I just thought I'd bring that up. That always perks you up a little bit. Mm-hmm. National survey says 6% of Americans hunt.
That's it?
Yep. 94% of them go, ah!
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
That's surprising.
Guess how much money the 6% spent across the board. This is duck calls, hip waders, decoys, fishing rods, boats.
I know it's millions upon millions.
How about into the billions?
Is it that much?
$45.2 billion.
No way.
Dollars.
Dang.
Isn't that amazing?
I wouldn't have guessed that in a while.
I wouldn't ever. Now, I don't know if the government would lie to me or not, but this is a government study.
Yeah, like
what's your thoughts
45
on,
billion.
What's your thoughts on the government?
What they're for, I'm against.
Okay. All right. A new report released on October 12th by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service shows that 14.4 million hunters aged 16 and over contributed $45.2 billion with a B. $1,000 million is a billion. Is that correct?
That's right.
All right. To the economy in 2022.
That's insane.
2022.
Dang.
The survey found that 6% of the U.S. population hunted, and they spent a combined of 241 million days afield last year. How do they do that?
Yeah.
Did that make sense?
No.
Yeah, it does, I guess. I don't know how they figured it. That's weird, 241 million days afield. Huh. This conducted survey every 5 years. National Survey of Fishing and Hunting and Wildlife Association Recreation put this total expenditure for wildlife-related recreation $394.8 billion, which includes $144 billion in fishing and hunting.
Crazy.
That's recreation, you know. It's 300. Golly. Well, that's buying jock straps and helmets and tennis rackets and duck calls and decoys and the whole works, evidently.
And that's something.
And, you know, and they call us heathens just because we hunt and fish. I don't think we're heathens, are we?
Not at all.
I think we're nice people.
Well, best salt of the earth.
I agree.
And truly, outdoors men and women are, I think, some of the most generous people in the world.
Yes. Yeah, I can prove it.
If there's somebody in need, you know, the outdoors people come together and help.
Look what we do in little old St. Joe, where it's $60,000-some in one night for Delta Waterfowl.
Yeah.
Ducks Unlimited has raised billions, millions over the years in the deal. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever. It just goes on and on and on and on and on. And they just reach for their billfold. You know, I know guys that hunt that kill five ducks a year and are giddy about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay in the deal. So, and that, I just found these numbers so bizarre on the deal. Hey, we have Bud Gordon. We're going to have Bud on and talk about your four little tootsies.
Yeah. Also, if you're looking, you know, Christmas just around the corner, unfortunately, if you're looking for a gift for that hard-to-buy person in your family, and if they like to fish, get them a guided fishing trip. If it's on the Kansas side, you can't go wrong with Toby Lewandowski, Absolute Fishing Guides. You can look them up on the web. Or on the Missouri side, Fish in Truman Lake, Richard Bowling. They are the best. If the person that you like also has a live scope, Toby and Richard both are incredible teachers. And if you want to learn how to get the most out of your electronics, they can help you do that as well as catching some fish, too. So, on the Kansas side, Toby Lewandowski, Absolute Fishing Guides. His phone number is 785-845-6043. Or just look him up at Absolute Fishing Guides. And Richard Bowling, you can just look him up also. But they're both great guys and make a great gift. If you're listening to this, my darling wife, that wouldn't be a bad gift for me,
yeah,
too.
He's not going to get you anything fishing-wise. You got everything there is. Yeah, how many rod and reels do you own? One?
Oh, I don't know.
Three?
It's just like how many guns do you have? I don't know.
Not enough.
And there's never enough.
Never enough.
But anyway, we got Bud Gordon from the Sports Medicine Store with us. Bud, what's going on at the Sports Medicine Store today?
Good morning and Merry Christmas to all you guys.
Back at you.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
We do a number of custom insoles. I think, Mark, at the edge of the store 17 years ago, we've done a little over 17,000 pair.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That's great.
Ask those people that come in with a problem called plantar fasciitis. Something you know all about, Mark.
Yes,
right?
Unfortunately, you got a lot of experience with that.
And it's epidemic in this country. We do thousands of people, like at the Ford plant and GM and the Big Bear plant, plants where people are on their feet for 10, 12 hours a day for 20, 30 years. It's just awful. And people will come in, they'll be complaining. They think they know what it is. It's pretty easy to identify because it hurts like a son of a gun. And we'll make about two pair of custom insoles, not a three-quarter, only a full length because the foot's not three-quarter. And I'll take three or four steps and look back with this awe kind of look like, oh, my God, what happened? Like you did, probably 15 years. Like, oh, my God, why did this thing work? I spent thousands and thousands of dollars on everything imaginable, and they just don't work. I don't believe them. But somebody told me to come see Bud, and you guys did. So we see that all the time. And I tell people, they say, well, you healed me. I said, I haven't healed a darn thing. I splitted you correctly so you can heal. Much like if you broke your arm, I'd reset the arm and put a cast on. You're out of pain, but you're not healed. Well, custom insoles are like a great split. We set the foot precisely right. We form the insoles to your foot in the perfect position, and you're completely out of pain. But then it may take a week or two or 3 weeks to baby it until it heals. And once you're healed, you're just probably healed, what, 8 or 10 years ago and never come back? Probably.
That's exactly right. Yep, exactly.
And that's exactly what happened. We have a new material we developed over the last year, and it looks like you're hard on your insoles. You maybe get, what, 5 to 6 years out of them or more?
That's about right. About 5 to 6, exactly.
The new material we've got will last about 15 years at the same price.
And you just fitted me with those, and I love this new material. It's got a cup in the heel. It's just the really – well, the other ones were great too. But I've been there, done this. I've tried everything that was out there before I found you, and it's that full-length insole that makes a difference. I tried the others that you hear advertised all over the place, and they're only a half insole. And, you know, maybe if somebody had an arch problem, it'd be okay for that. But for what my problems were – it didn't work. So I'm just telling anybody out there, if you've tried other things and they haven't worked, the Sports Medicine Store, give them a try before you give up, because it has helped me. And I've got about as bad a feet. You know, in fact, I think one time you said I should be a poster child for bad feet.
Bad looks. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. I apologize.
So how do people get their foot fixed?
They simply come over to 9738 Warnell Road. We're in Suite 100. You just drive up the front door. They may have 3 steps to get in the store, okay? So it's easy with your feet that don't feel very good. They come in. We're there from 9 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon during the week, and 9 to 2 on Saturdays. I don't want anybody there on Sundays all about duck hunting or fishing or something.
I hope
they
so.
They simply call me at area code 816-859-544 and ask for Butter Steve. And we'll give them any explanation they want. You don't need an appointment. Just come in. It takes maybe, 20 minutes, Mark, to get your foot actually fixed, and you walk out without pain. So for anybody that's out there that's got really sore, tired feet or plantar fasciitis, come see us before you try anything else.
Absolutely.
Solution, and it works.
It was 816-859. What was that? The last part went kind of fast. 5040, was that right?
5440.
5440.
You're dyslexic.
You're good. And I got bad feet too, right? Okay, bud. Well, thank you, and thank you for what you do for me. I mean, I really do appreciate it. I can never thank you enough. Well, Merry Christmas to you, and we'll talk to you next week.
Who do we have as a guest for the second half hour?
We're going to have Truman Lake biologist.
Oh, it's even better.
Chris Brook.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
Hey, we were brought to you by King City Lumber, kingcitylumber.com. Outbuilding guys, specialists, they are the finest. They might be the best in the world. Did you ever think of that? Maybe they'll send them to rebuild Gaza.
Oh, well, they could do it.
They could do it.
And if anybody, it would be better than it was
before. It's already
been
leveled anyway, so they all got a level lot to work on.
They'll build it back better than it was before.
Isn't that bizarre? Have a war. I just despise war.
I know.
Why in the world? Why can't they get along? I don't understand. But anyway, if you need an outbuilding, King's Hay Lumber, Marty Monty Tunks, fine humans, as we say here on the air. Maybe some of the finest people I've ever met in my life. So, master carpenters, great prices. You won't believe it, but you better get them going, because it's demand is unbelievable. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have had a weird morning. Things have not worked. Police officers want to talk to people. He was a nice guy, wasn't he? Well, but anyway.
Covell, our crack board operator, Covell Hudson, he was in a hurry to get here and got stopped. But fortunately, the Overland Park police officer was very kind and let him off with a warning.
Common sense.
Hurried him on his way here.
Yeah, what the hey. Hey, there's something I want to pass along. We're going to have Chris Brook talk fisheries here in just a minute. But something that bothers me, so I'm old and grouchy, and I just put it. No, some days I'm grouchy, according to my wife. But when things go through my brain, it bothers me anymore. I just spit it out. That's one thing about old age. You know, I don't care. You know the deal. But the thing that's really bothered me is waterfowl hunter numbers are declining at the most rapid pace they've ever. Now, you can't tell it around Squaw Creek, Lois Bluffs now. But you get around, in Ontario, I'll just go, this is just, there's a whole study of this, but I'll read you Ontario's on this thing. A couple years back, I had 150,994 waterfowlers in Ontario. Last year, they had 44,000.
Oh, wow. That's a big drop.
Dropped over 100,000. Of course, you know, I know better, too, than to make this statement, but I'm going to. The Canadian government up there is way far left, and they don't want anybody to have a gun, and sure don't want you to shoot a pesky duck, although it's so good for their economy, and makes their cash register ring, common sense will not be tolerated.
Yeah, right.
And it's weird. You know, leave those people alone. You know, I know of a story of a father-son going hunting, and it was just amazing, the harassment that they gave those people. So I just thought I'd pass that along to you. So who is our guest?
We have got Truman Lake biologist, Mr. Chris Brook. Chris, thank you so much for getting up early and being with us. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. Thank you all for having me on.
Well, we appreciate it more than I can tell you. But first of all, what's the best and the worst part about being a biologist?
I mean, I think for me, the best part is just, you know, really digging into the fishery and understanding the details. And, it may be a little different than most people, but I enjoy, you know, sitting over my microscope, looking at fish otoliths and aging them and just really digging into that biology and understanding the fishery.
Yes.
The worst part's probably, I mean, we all have the jobs where, you know, when you're not doing the fun parts of the job, when you're not doing the fish stuff and you have to deal with everything else, I think would generally be the worst part.
Yeah. The best part, I don't think, would be for me sitting on top of a microscope. But I talked to you a little bit during the week, and you did fish Truman Lake for many, many, many years before you became a biologist, did you not?
Yes, I did, and that was, you know, when I was growing up, that's where my family went. I actually, you know, get to hear a few stories from my dad when they snagged down there before the lake was even built.
Oh, wow.
It was just the Osage River. So
cool.
My family's history, you know, when the lake was built, my grandma got a houseboat on the lake and been going down there my whole life.
Oh, how fun.
Cool.
Yeah, that's got to be a dream job when you become a biologist and then be able to come out and Truman Lake is your place of business. That's got to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, don't know that I could have imagined getting to where I was, maybe especially in the time frame I was. It just wasn't, you know, when that opportunity came up, it was, you know, just worked out great for me.
You know, you fished that lake for so many years, and now you're a biologist. How many years have you been working as a biologist on Truman?
I'll be hitting 6 years in about 2 weeks as the year turns over.
So have you learned anything changed in your mind? Do you look at the lake differently now from a biologist's point of view than when you were just recreationally fishing? Have you learned anything that surprised you about Truman Lake?
I think, you know, at this point, I just know a lot more about it. You know, when you're coming down three or four times a year, and especially growing up when your dad's kind of leading the boat and you don't necessarily know as much about what's going on. And then you move into this biologist role and you know, that's what you're thinking about all the time. And it just see it with a lot more clarity. Also see the lake as a whole and not just kind of the parts that
hey. Chris, we're losing you there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There now. Okay, that's better.
But yeah, just getting to see the lake as a whole as a biologist, you know, in all the areas and then all the fisheries and just a totally different perspective and level of detail that I never had as an angler coming down from time to time.
Fred and I are pretty ate up with walleye, even though we don't catch very many of them.
We try.
Yeah. But I heard a rumor that there were not going to be walleye stocked into Truman and Lake of the Ozarks. Is there any truth to that?
That's nothing that I've heard about. So I'm going to say no on that one. We've discussed walleye stocking plans. Not much has changed. We have a walleye working group that has several biologists across the state that comes together and kind of is at least at the center of that when those decisions are made. And we haven't discussed any major changes to stocking, and for sure not for Truman. For sure not reducing fish for Truman or Lake of the Ozarks.
That makes me happy.
Yes, it does.
Any idea how many fish go into Lake of the Ozarks or Truman?
As far as walleye goes?
Yes.
I'm not sure exactly on Lake of the Ozarks. As far as Truman goes, we're targeting 150,000 fish a year, but those are 1 to 2 inch fish, which look really small, especially if you hold them in your hand.
Yeah. Any idea how many of those survive to a catchable age?
I don't have a good answer for that question. And kind of the way we would look at the fishery, and Truman, probably more so than our other fisheries, we're putting some fish in there, but we're for sure not putting fish in Truman at the rate as we do like Stockton or Smithville or some of our other major fisheries. But, you know, we're kind of, especially in some of those other fisheries, we're putting fish in and we're seeing what comes out. And it's kind of like we understand if we put this in, this is what comes out, but we don't necessarily know. I don't know exact numbers on how many of those fish are surviving.
Have you done any samplings for any of the other species of fish for this fall?
The main thing I do in the fall is just crappie. And then we also have a big blue catfish study going on looking at the slot limit.
So what's the crappie numbers looking like for next year? Can we get a sneak peek into that?
I think moving around the lake, I think we have a good class of what would be like 2.5-year-old fish, which means we've got a lot of white crappie between that 9, 10, 11-inch range. We didn't see quite as many bigger fish and quite as many small fish. And I think, you know, when I look at the numbers, I think it looks a lot like average for Truman Lake, but average crappie fishing on Truman Lake is pretty good. So
yeah.
You know, we had the flood back in 2019. Are we still seeing any effect from that as far as I know we had some really good recruitment numbers, a good spawning recruitment, and are there any lasting effects from that?
So specifically for the crappie fishing or for the crappie population, I think we're starting to see some of that, the effects of the flood fade away a little bit. You know, those year classes, that 2019 year class isn't completely gone. A lot of the biggest fish in our population are going to be 5, 6, 7 years old. So from a crappie standpoint, there's a few of those still around. But in a lot of ways, the effects of it are starting to fade. Whereas with some other species, you know, walleye for sure, we're still seeing some booms from that flood year. And we also have a couple good year classes coming in behind them. For hybrids, we've got a really good year class from 2019.
Cool.
Not sure. Part of that came from we had a good year out of the hatchery the same year we had the flood year. So maybe not directly tied to the flooding in that specific instance. But still getting good effects from that 2019 year class. And then if you go into your longer live species, if you look at your blue catfish or your paddlefish, 2019 is almost just kind of a blip in the radar in the lifespan of a catfish or a paddlefish.
Chris,
and then
go ahead.
And then for like largemouth bass, we always seem to struggle a little bit with largemouth bass, and we get a few years where we get some good reproduction, but then it just doesn't seem to see itself out, and I'm sure we're struggling on a few fronts on the largemouth bass population.
Any idea why?
I think to some extent, just as the reservoir ages, that's going to happen. But I think it hits Truman worse than some reservoirs because we don't have any aquatic vegetation. We don't have a good bluegill population. We've got a lot of sedimentation. So those are all factors that are not going to be good for your bass population. So then we're kind of, we may have some better years here and there, but we're just, you know, struggling to produce those fish and struggling to keep them alive long enough to become big fish.
Chris, I've been doing talk radio for 38 years, and I've done a lot of fisheries biologists over the years and talked to them, and it always comes down to one thing, and when I get to talking to them off the record or on the record, is the lake in balance? And I know that's a big thing for fisheries biologists to... Is there one species that's gobbling up another species? Is the thing in balance? Is it okay? Is it great? Is it fine? Is it bad? What's going on?
Oh, I mean, that's a little bit tricky as a question.
It sure is.
I mean, I think there's some places that are of the parts of the lake that are probably in better balance than others. You know, Truman is just, you know, as a fishery dominated by crappie and catfish is the biggest things we think about, and probably some of our biggest, most abundant sport fish. But, you know, the crappie population is in pretty good shape across most of the lake. We do have, in the Big Tebow area, our fish aren't growing real fast, and that's kind of an issue. In my trap nets this fall, I think my biggest black crappie was 9.4 inches, which is just that's just not what we want to see. Yeah. So, you know, we're struggling a little bit on the growth end there in Big Tebow because we really have too many small black crappie. But a lot of the rest of the lake, if you go up the Palmy Arm, looks really good. If you go up the lake, you know, you see lots of good fish. And then the catfish population is one that I would say we have lots and lots of numbers. But we probably have too many small fish, and they're not growing as fast as what we'd like to see them grow. You know, so yeah,
I noticed there was a recommendation for anglers to keep the smaller blues, and that's why they're just not growing fast enough.
That's a part of it, and if we're talking about producing trophy fish, you know, they aren't growing fast enough. But then when they get into that, you know, over 20-inch size range, you know, we do have the slot limit in place, so you can't harvest between 26 and 34. But when fish get over 20 inches, or especially when they get closer to that slot and over the slot, a lot of people want to harvest those fish. So our exploitation rates, the rate that they're getting harvested at, is really high after we get them larger, but it takes us a long time to get them there because they're growing slow.
I'd rather not keep a big fish anyway. I'd rather keep those smaller ones.
Right.
I've got to eat them.
Yeah, if you can eat
right.
a blue cat.
And part of the issue is where it'd be really nice to shift that harvest is down probably smaller than what most people want to harvest them at. Basically, you know, the smaller we can harvest more blue cats, the smaller sizes we can harvest those fish, the faster it's going to get them out of the system and the faster it's going to reduce that competition.
Is there any thought about increasing the limit on those smaller fish?
I haven't thought a lot about the blue cat fish. Where we're going to go from a regulation standpoint, and in part because we're in the middle of a study right now. We just basically completed our second year sampling out of a three-year study. So a year from now, we will have completed our third year. We're going to start looking at that a little harder. There's probably going to be some kind of public input there. But to some extent, I'm just kind of waiting to get more feedback from our data and more information before I really start thinking about where I want to go with that and discussing that.
Interesting.
How exactly do you do your sampling? You said the crappie nets. How does that work? Can you describe that?
So we'll basically, you know, tie to the bank and have a lead line that's just kind of like a fence almost. You know, you just kind of drag out there. And then there's a box in the back end of it out in the water, and they just swim into it. And I mean, it sounds pretty simple, but it works really well.
It sounds simple, but yeah, with all the timber in that lake,
yeah.
I mean, is that a problem keeping the net out of the wood?
So a lot of the sites, a lot of places we go, we do the exact same spot every year. So we kind of pick out places that we know aren't going to be as bad. But even then, if we're going to a new site, especially these days with your site imaging technology and what you can do with electronics, we can kind of get an idea if there's any sticks or brush there that's going to cause us issues.
Tough job, I think.
Yeah.
you're trying to keep everybody happy, and there's no way.
Yeah.
There is no way. There's some people just eat, sleep, and drink blue cat. Some people eat, sleep, and drink crappie, you know. It's no way to keep everybody happy.
No.
Not a deal.
There's certainly some truth to that. And with blue cat, just with blue cats, you know, there's people that want to keep most of the fish they catch, and there's people that want to release everything and everything in between trophy fishermen and people that are harvest oriented and jug liners and pole and line people. And it's just such a diverse crowd that you can't please everyone.
I want to put my vote in. You're putting in 150,000 inch and a half walleye a year in Truman. Is that correct?
That's a target number, so it can vary a little bit with what the hatcheries produce.
I want 300,000 shoved in if I have a vote.
Yeah,
they're too good a fish. They're too good at eating fish.
For what it's worth, in 2020, we put 390,000 in.
Wow.
In 2021, we put 363,000 in.
All right.
It's a real shame, Chris, that you guys don't have a way to know how successful it is. There's no way, because they diversify all over the lake, so you can't tell if you got 2% success or 20% success. That's the downside of it, I'd assume.
Yeah, and it's hard, especially with that size of fish, to it's hard to put a study together to measure it, and it's also like it just costs money if you are going to do it. So Where do you put your time and your money and your projects? But we do know people are catching those fish, and we can't sample them all, but we can sample a few of them, right?
Yeah, exactly what it is.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time here pretty quick, but I wanted to ask you just real quick. Is LiveScope having any effect on fish populations, or is this something that you're afraid of?
That's a difficult question. It's something a lot of people, not just in Missouri, but especially in other states, Kansas is doing a lot of work trying to look at that. And I think it's a difficult question to answer. And even if you don't go out and catch more fish when you use your live scope, there's people that may go fishing more because they have a live scope.
Exactly.
So are more fish getting caught because of the live scope? I would say most likely, but at the end of the day, we've got to come back to some of our numbers that we're not necessarily going to look at the technology as much as we're going to look at our numbers. What are our catch rates? How many fish are out there? How fast are they growing? And how fast, what's our age structure look like and things like that? So we're still going to manage on those basic biological measures that we're going to be looking at.
Chris, thank you for getting up this early and joining us on the air. It means more to us than you possibly know and our listeners. So I appreciate you more than you probably know.
Yeah, we need to get you back on when we got just a little more time.
Yeah.
Yep, that sounds good to me, and thanks for having me on.
Well, I really appreciate it. Keep up the great work, Chris.
What a good guy.
Thank you.
Yeah. What a good guest.
Yeah, what a fun lake that would be to have to work on.
Yeah.
But that's like four different lakes in one.
It sure is.
Got to be a difficult job.
And I don't argue surveys because one day, as well as I do, some days the fish are on a point where they set the net, and sometimes there isn't.
Yep.
So you take the average mean. It's like waterfowl counting. Take the average mean, it's just kind of weird.
Right.
It's a tough job, and everybody gets mad at you because they didn't catch fish that day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Fishing,
you're right. You're not going to make everybody happy. There's no way, especially when it comes to fisheries.
We are brought to you by Sure Ag, one of the finest fertilizer people in America. We got a minute left. My goodness. This thing just goes.
They are
the finest people. This is the people I've used for 16 years. You need to go visit with these guys. You farmers that listen to the show, we got a lot of farmers. Sure Ag, Savannah, Osborne, Four City, and now at Plattsburgh. You got problems? They got problems. They'll help you through it. So Sure Ag, that's the ones I recommend.
And if you need your boat winterized and a place to store it, you can do it down at Sportsman's Outfitter Marine down in Belton. They are the people that fixed my engine when the person that rebuilt it said I needed to buy a new engine. And within a day, they found the problem, and it was just a little plug that had a broken sprocket, and they fixed it and saved me almost $18,000. I would have had to buy a new engine. That's what I did. I went to them. I asked Joe Falco, told him, this guy tells me I need a new engine. He said, this doesn't sound right. Let my mechanic, Dave Hemme, let me have him look at it. And he did.
And he fixed it.
And within a day. Unbelievable.
I took it to three different mechanics, and Dave Hemme fixed it in 20 minutes.
Well, you can't beat them. You can't beat them. Sportsman's Outfitter, whether you need a – they've got a lot of boats now, too.
New ones.
Yeah. They've got more inventory now than they have in several years.
Yeah.
So get out there and see. They're great folks.
I'm going to the duck blind.
I'm going to go to the Lake of the Ozarks.
That'd be good for you.
Yeah.
You need
good therapy.
You need some time off. Drive slow. Don't get no tickets.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hopefully, if I do, it'd be the same officer that Covell got that just gave him a warning.
He just gave him a warning. Wasn't that nice?
Yeah, Covell said he had the radio on. I said, that's where I'm going. I have to be there 5 minutes.
He tried to move quick for me.
Well, I do the old limping routine. I get out and limp, and I'm crippled, and I'm going to the hospital, and they go, oh, okay,
or just go ahead. Pass some gas and say, I got to get to the bathroom.
Whatever it takes. I know a woman went, I can't tell her what happened. I better not tell a story, too. Tell you what, that wraps up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in a great outdoor.
Have a great week. So long, everybody.